Blog Talk Radio.
You love me, you hate me, you'll never forget me. Get ready to feel the... Yo, high five.
Yeah, baby. What the? Hello, hello, hello. Rob, can you hear me?
Hello? I can hear you, bro.
Holy shit! I'm not kidding you. People, if you're listening out there, I literally was pushing every button, Twitch, and trying to make this thing come together, and I had to restart it. How many times, Rob?
Three or four, at least.
Yeah, three or four times, but we're talking about with 4 minutes left, and our friend Nikki always tells us to start 15 minutes before the show to get a sound check, and DDP was all over the phone trying to put 10 pounds of shit into a two-pound bag and was ticking down as I can't figure out. Well, we're going to have the first time of dead air, especially on a show that our host, Yoga Doc, is actually here today. Is Yoga Doc on?
Yoga Doc is
here, and we're going to be bringing on the world champion, TNA world champion, as our special guest. I'm really excited about having RVD coming on the show here. But before we bring the man on, I want to give you guys a little update of what's been happening. I was in Atlanta last week, and we went over, Yoga Doc and I went over to the concourse at the Concourse Athletic Club in Atlanta and had a kick-ass YRG workout with a really great group of people there. And we were pretty full, wouldn't you say, Doc?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. We were burning it up, too, man. It wasn't a lot of people that had to modify, but the ones who did, they did the modifications, and we had a great workout. And then we went to the night before, I think it was two nights before, we were at 37 Main. Yoga Doc brought me in there to host the night at the Rock Bar of karaoke. And, of course, the number one question was, is DDP going to sing? And, well... After I don't know how many tequilas and margaritas that they were my healthy margarita mix, I am screaming over the band all night long with the people. So my voice was totally gone before I ever got up there. No excuses. I got up there to sing I'm No Angel by Greg Allman, and I got through the first verse, and it was so bad I had to go, this really sucks. And I stopped. And I stopped singing, and the band stopped playing. And I was like, hey, motherfuckers, I didn't say to stop playing the music. I didn't say I was going to stop. And boom, they started right up again. Right, Doc?
He's like, yeah, keep going, keep going. I'm gonna throw to William Shatner on this thing. So I
did the song, I'm No Angel. I go angel to the dark. I don't remember what I was doing up there, but I was having a lot of fun, and they were laughing their asses off. I was hoping someone videoed that. I
was actually hoping no one videoed that. But anyway.
But for me, man, I would love to have had that spontaneousness of the improvisation. I knew the words, but I could barely read them. You got me so drunk that night. They kept feeding me shots of tequila. Needless to say, we had a great time. And then later on, I heard Rob Zombie was in town. So started texting Mr. Zombie back and forth, and he hooked us all up with backstage tickets. Zombie, like, what is that? Was that called the Mayhem Tour there, Doc?
Yes, it was the Rockstar Energy Drink Mayhem Tour. Great show.
Oh, yeah. And he, like, right before that, Lamb of God was up there, and Willie Adler was up on stage throwing up diamond cutters. And we had a hell of a time. But Rob was just amazing.
He stole the show.
Oh, it was an amazing show. And then Korn had to follow him. I can't even imagine that. You know, I wouldn't want to follow that match. It's sort of be like following a match of our guest that's going to be on here. And RBD, what's your name? Robert, let me know when RBD does is in the queue. You can hit me on that iChat so I know when he's here. It reminds me a lot of having to follow a Rob Van Dam match because even though we're not talking about so much wrestling tonight, our topic tonight is living the dream. And we're going to find out how Rob came into the business and where he did and when he decided to actually become a wrestler and made it a reality. And I've got to tell you guys that I don't know how often I've really talked about this, but Rob was the real reason why I ever even thought about the idea of doing any kind of yoga, which would become YRG, because the guy was so flexible. And if any of you are wrestling fans out there, I mean, you know, Rob could shoot a guy off into the ropes and he'd go into that full, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme split, you know, kip up and do a spot, you know, with the guy. And the amazing bumps that that I've seen him take. I got the actually got to see him back when I was working independence, and I'd that's when I started wrestling when I was 35, which was 1990. And then I tore my rotator cuff in 91. So 92 I was off, and I remember Rob being in a town that I was watching him do stuff off the top rope to the floor, you know, these crazy bumps. I'm like, how can that guy take that kind of punishment? I mean, hitting railings, hitting opponents, just throwing his body through the wind, so to speak. And, you know, I just couldn't believe the amount of abuse that his body was taking. I thought to myself that there is no way that he'll be able to do this when he gets to 40. And he's coming up on 40 and he's the champ now. So it'll be once we get him on here, I'll get into a little bit of a elaboration on that when he gets on the show here. Doc, what's been happening with you? How's your world going right now?
World is good. Hey, I'm on here talking about some of my favorite stuff. I'm happy. You know, we're rocking and rolling. Well, when did you leave? I have no idea. These are just long, long hours of activity, let's say, with brief moments of sleep. And what is this, Thursday, right? It's all good.
Yeah, it's all good. So since we're talking about, you know, chasing the dream, you know, and living your dreams, and I often tell kids to, you know, if you living the dream or, you know, finding something, you know, achieving a goal is finding something that you love to do and figuring out how to get someone to pay you to do it. You know, there was a time when, you know, rap music was just rhymes slung on the street, you know, and I'm not sure exactly who was the first rap artist that was whoever made their way and made all of a sudden it a reality. But if you can imagine the guys on the street corner slinging these raps back and forth at each other, and one guy says, you know what, I'm going to make a record. I'm going to make this into music. And how many people would have said to him, yeah, right, what are you smoking? You know, there's like, why would you think that that could be music when, you know, it's never been done before? So, you know, I know you're not into rap music at all, but there were some bands that came out in the 70s, Run DMC, but they weren't the first.
Yeah. No, well, you had one of your early guys. They were a bunch of guys called, they did the song Rapper's Delight, if you remember that guy. And they were one of the earlier rap artists. But, I mean, as you said, there was this whole thing happening on the streets, you know, happening. They were talking about even in 1977 when, you know, really wasn't that over. They were having parties in the streets, you know, in Brooklyn and in the Bronx, but, you know, and they kind of all made their way up from there. But trying to think of the name of the band that's Rapper's Delight.
The name, it's pretty much irrelevant, you know, because the bottom line is it was an art, and it's turned into one of our biggest, you know, hip hop and rap. It's pretty much all thrown into one with R&B today. And the point is that at some point, they had to say, you know what, I love doing this, and let's see if I can make this. You know, they had to set a goal, like, I'm going to make this a record, and had to be laughed at. you know, all the way through it. And pretty much all people who are, you know, are groundbreakers. Rob Zombie. I remember when we first hooked up and, okay, we got Sugar's Rapper's Delight. Robert just sent me there. Sugar Hill Gang.
There you go.
Yeah, there they are. I think they were one of the very first. But even if they weren't the first, but as soon as that, you know, as soon as that one person does something, all of a sudden it becomes a reality that other people can do things. And this all works its way back into, you know, YRG as well, and your workout and your discipline. And, you know, when you find someone, you see someone like Arthur and what he achieved, or Terry or Stacy or Doug, you know, when you see what they've achieved, it makes you believe that, well, I could do this too. One of, I think, the best stories ever is, I got to see if I can remember his name now, the guy who broke the mile.
The 4 minute mile. Was that
4 minute mile? 4 minute mile. Wow.
Yeah. Sebastian Coe came later, but there was someone else.
He broke it. He broke it in 1955. Roger Bannister was his name. Now, you have to understand that back in the 50s, the 40s, they said it's impossible to break the 4 minute mile. It can't be done. If you were to break the 4 minute mile, there was actually studies that said your heart could explode. Now, no lie. You know, I mean, that's true. That's a fact. You know, but there, you know, the bottom line is this guy Roger Bannister broke the 4 minute mile in 1955. Doc, do you know how many people, or should say, how many people broke that 4 minute mile next year? Do you have any idea?
There was like a ton thereafter. It was something like 10 or 14. It was ridiculous.
It was 16.
Yeah.
16 people. Because they saw that Roger Bannister, I can't remember who he raced against, but whoever his number one competitor was, he broke Roger's record and the world record and set a new world record. And then they had the race of the century come on. I guess it was, they did it in England or something, where they were going to have this, you know, this mile race. And Roger beat him again, setting a new world record. And 16 people would go on to break that 4 minute mile that year. And it's all about seeing someone else do it, someone else accomplish a dream. And when you're coming up, especially when you were, you know, like when it was me, when I was 8 years old, my dream was wanting to be a professional wrestler. And, you know, I tried it when I was 22 and it didn't work out for me. And then that was in 1978. And then wrestling blew up huge in the 80s. And I was so pissed at myself for not paying my dues and working towards, you know, living my dream of wanting to be a wrestler, that I stopped watching, and then I got drawn back in towards the, you know, mid to late 80s, and, you know, started watching again, and I thought, well, maybe I could be a manager. And that's how that whole thing came, where I became a manager in the business, because I thought I was too old to be a wrestler. And then when it came down to getting to WCW and actually getting to manage the Freebirds and Scott Hall, who was the Diamond Scud at the time, and getting to actually live that part of the dream, and then them tell me, you know what, DDP, the hair, the wrap, the rings, you know, the diamond dolls, you're too much. How can you be too much in wrestling? But, you know, you're too much. You're taking the show away from the wrestlers, and the wrestler draws the money. And T.A. Magnum said to me, what I wish should have done is give me a pair of boots and tights to see if you could do this. And he laughed and walked away. Well, that day I sat down, and I get some serious thinking. I remember distinctly riding home with Eric Bischoff, because we were also bottom card, fourth string. I was the color commentator, and he was the play-by-play guy. We were fourth string nobodies. And I remember telling him on the way home that night, since they took away my manager's dream, that I was going to become a wrestler. And he thought I was smoking crack. And, you know, and everybody did. I remember telling Michael P.S. Hayes on my last time walking into the ring, and he fell down at the curtain laughing his ass off, literally laughing his ass off, you know, and falling down on his ass. And I was like, fuck you guys, I'm going to the ring. And, you know, people will laugh at you when you tell them your dreams, or they won't believe in you. Like, if you go back to Rapper's Delight, when they developed rap music and made it a reality. Now, my guest is here. Do we have some music for him, Robert? Do we have something?
Drop that down!
The whole fucking town!
Nice.
Drop that down! I want to welcome in, he is the world champion, I believe he has been the WWE world champion and the world champion, now the TNA world champion, I give you the one and only RVD. How you doing, bro?
I'm doing excellent, DDP, and I'm glad I didn't have to bring my own music. I appreciate that. Yeah.
You know, it was an Rob, you weren't on here earlier, but, you know, Nikki had taught us to get on 15 minutes early and make sure you're all queued up. And well, it got to 4 minutes, and I got a call from Robert. I was like, oh, my God, I got to get myself set up. And, you know, I'm getting my head set up, and I'm putting everything together, and I'm registering under the wrong name for some reason because Robert, my buddy, had gone on here. And so now I can't get live. And literally, I am not bullshitting you, bro. It came down to where he was playing my music when I finally, luckily, because it was no skill involved, luckily figured it out that I could get myself on the damn, you know, show and could actually be here to run this sucker. So,
Nikki will tell you, I sign in with 5 seconds to go almost every week. I call in and have everybody sweating. I never plan on it. It just ends up being that way almost every single week. When I call in, they always say, the lady says, your show will start in 5 seconds.
I love it. Now, for those of you who don't know, Rob does a show. Tell us a little bit about your show, Rob.
I do a radio show probably similar to this, I'm going to say, without having heard this. But the idea is, you know, we have this outlet for our messages. And mine is, you know, I like to inspire people to think outside the box, which is what I do. You know, on yesterday's very heated show on RVD Radio, honestly, that conversation, Diamond, it went on all night, like way past the radio. Like Officer X calls in, and then he starts, you know, we went like 20 minutes, and he's taking my side now. And he's saying, yeah, well, what Booker doesn't realize is this and that. I'm like, oh, you're real fucking brave now that you're off the air. Where were you? he said, well, I was listening, taking it in. I had to think about it. But we talk about different topics all the time on my show, which I do on Wednesdays irregularly, whenever I want to do it. And it's all kinds of different things. We don't care. We'll talk about it, whatever it is. And last night, we were talking about this subject that's been around forever, as long as I've been in the industry of pro wrestling. They like to bring up every once in a while, shouldn't wrestlers have insurance? I mean, they're like employees, even though they're not. They're independent contractors. And much to everybody's surprise, I take the opposite side of the view from what most wrestlers would, and it's just because I'm coming from logic. You know, we are independent contractors. That's how it is. So it's up to us to make the best deal that we can, and why should we fight for everybody all the way down and force insurance? And plus, who are we forcing it out of? It's a one-man show. Right now, there's WWE and TNA, and that's it. So for Booker to say, well, I'm not just talking about them. I'm talking about in general. There is no in general. You're talking about independence? No. Well, then you're talking about them. So we went round and round and round, and at least an hour and a half of debate back and forth. And I got to say, that's probably my favorite RVD radio show that we've done so far.
You know, and I think I surprised you. Before we even go any farther, I want to let you know, because you've been adjusted. You've adjusted RVD numerous times, haven't you, Yogi Doc?
Yeah, correct. That's right. Hey, what's up, Rob?
Hey, what's up, Justin?
Hey, man. What's going on?
That's the yoga doc, and we got Rob, Dr. Craig Aaron, and we got Robert on the stick coordinate calls. We'll get some of that to that later. But yes, it was a fun show last night, and much to your surprise, when we'd hooked up to head down to Justin McCulley's brother's L.A. boxing gym, when we actually sat and talked about it on RVD TV, I actually agreed with you, if you recall.
Yes, I do recall. That's why I was surprised it didn't quite seem to come out the same way last night on the air.
No. Wait a minute. What I said was I agreed with you that there's not. I said I think they should do something about it, but they're never going to. And my part that I agreed with you about was we knew what we were signing up for when we came in. There was nobody got to put a gun to your head saying, you know what, I'm not going to wrestle anymore if you don't give me insurance. Because get the hell out of here. They ran you off.
And, you know, we could probably take over your whole show to continue this. But you're right. And the thing is, it's just a perk. Insurance is a perk. Why should we make it across the board? Everyone gets that. Why don't we make it across the board? Everyone gets their travel taken care of, or their hotels, or their cars, or what? Why do we draw the line right there at insurance? Just because? Well, they should be insured. Of course they should. Any good businessman or responsible adult should make sure that they do have insurance. Should the guy that they sign a contract with pay for it? Not necessarily. That's in the deal.
And you know what? And I never really thought about that. And I'm thinking, God, why didn't I make that part of my deal? Why didn't I make – I'll tell you what really pisses me off, Rob, that where I really dropped the ball. Because in 99, when I was – or at the end of 98 when I was redoing my deal, I didn't make it with Bischoff. Because Bischoff, as close as we were, he was never going to take care of me money-wise. I knew he was never – because of the nepotism thing. So what I did is I went to Harvey Schuller, who was the head of all TBS Sports, and talked with Harvey and worked out a deal. And how great would it have been to have the fact, if I would have said, I also would like to have my footage so I can use it in any way I'd like to when it comes to an infomercial or a show I'm doing or something like that. And then for Vince to have bought it and realized I still have the rights. I didn't do that like a schmuck, but I did do it with TNA, but the film footage for me wasn't, you know, what it was in WCW. It was just, you know, the crowds and everything else, just, you know, magnified times 10, which you know. So all that being said, I do want to get into what we talked about because it really spurred the idea for this show tonight. And the theme is about living the dream. And I talked earlier about how the first rappers, and maybe it was Rapper's Delight, or it was one of those early groups that was rapping on the street corner that one day said, you know what, I'm going to make this an album. And everybody must have looked at him and said, dude, you must be smoking crack. You know, because it was just like nothing that anybody heard. It wasn't music. Again, today it's the biggest thing on the planet. Again, with Rob Zombie, the same thing. He told me when he first came in with his music, with White Zombie, they were like, what the hell is this? No one's doing this. This isn't music. Now, Rob, 20 years later, is still the man. So I just went to see him in Atlanta with the Yoga Doc last weekend, and this place, you know, was going crazy, and the show was amazing. So when I said to you, and I thought the story was so amazing, and I wanted you to share it with the people here, let's just recreate that story. So when you started, like, what brought you into wrestling? How did this all happen to you? When did you think about, like, I could be a wrestler? How did that happen?
Well, I was a huge fan for an amount of time. There was a few years when I was going to every live show that was anywhere within like a 3-hour radius of my house.
How old were you then?
I think probably 14. Okay. Like that. I think it was around 84, 85, and you know, right away, like when I went to the live shows, I was hooked. You know, like I was just. Actually, as soon as I started watching it on TV, I resisted it. All my friends would watch it, and I heard it was stupid, so I went with that. Like, wrestling. Wait. Finally, they talked me into watching it, and I remember the first time I watched it, I couldn't wait to watch it next week and see Corporal Kirshner get the Iron Sheik back for, like, jumping him on his way to the ring or some stuff. And I was, like, totally into it. And when it came to Battle Creek and I got to go to a live show, I was there. And it was actually my very first live show that somebody put the idea in my head. This somebody was a friend of the family who traveled with WWE. She was the daughter of this couple that was friends with my parents. Okay, so that was the connection.
Right.
And she was going to get me back there by where the wrestlers were so I could meet some of them. I didn't even know what she looked like. I just knew her name. So I would go back by that area, and every time a woman would come out, I would say, Miss T, because I heard that was her name. It was Miss T, like Tanya. And then finally, a lady answered back, Robbie? And I was like, oh, yeah. She brought me down there. I met Hillbilly Jim and Killer Bees, Andre the Giant, Lanny Poffo, Big Night. I was like real excited meeting these guys as they were just walking by. But then, you know, she said to me, wow, you like wrestling so much, you should lift weights and stuff, and when you're 18, you could be a wrestler. And I'm sure I never had the thought cross my mind before that. It was just like, she said it was so it was so. I was like, I could be a wrestler? Like, I never even thought about that. You're not, like, just born a pro wrestler. Like, I could make that happen. I could, with my life. And I was just fascinated by what she just opened up in my mind. And looking back at it, she was probably a rat of some kind, a groupie role. I think she was probably banging some of the wrestlers and would travel with them like that. I don't know. You know, she would tell me she was a manager, but I have no idea what her deal was. But she knew some of the guys, traveled with them, served the purpose of, putting me in that place at that time and that idea in my head. So I just became so focused that nobody could turn me away from it. Not all my teachers, they tried, you know, I didn't have a lot of people supporting my decision, said, yeah, you'll make a great wrestler, Robbie. I mean, I'm like 140 pounds, probably 145 pounds or something, a little kid. Didn't know anybody famous. Nobody in my town knew anybody famous. So I didn't have a lot of people saying, wow, Rob, I'm looking forward to watching you when you have your successful career. It wasn't like that. I had to fight the odds, and I believed in myself enough to make up for everybody else. And I didn't have my goals set way up. I didn't say I'm going to be a world champion or anything like that. I just knew that I was going to do what it took to make it in and go as far as I could. And luckily, I never had to compromise any of my principles or anything like that. But I did. But as a youngster, I do remember wanting it that bad. So I can see how sometimes that can happen. But one thing led to another, you know. And before you know it, I'm finding information about all these wrestling schools from an ad that I got in a wrestling magazine. And I'm calling and writing to all these different schools, talking to whoever will respond back to me. And when I graduated high school at age 18, I took my first trip by myself, and I flew from Michigan to Boston. Killer Kowalski picked me up at the airport. He was so fucking cool to me. He took me to his wrestling school. We worked out. He took me back to my hotel and then picked me up, I think, for another workout the next day and back to the airport. He went so far out of his way, and it was like,
Killer Kowalski.
I mean, I was just this little kid, you know, and I didn't even give him any money. I was just someone that wanted to follow my dreams, and he went way out of his way for me. And of course, I'll never be able to forget that, you know, and that was my plans. I was going to save up no matter what I had to do. I was going to work 8 jobs if I had to, move to Boston, and whatever, wash dishes. I didn't care, and I was going to go to Killer Kowalski school. That was my plans at that point.
Dude, that is first of all, for people who are, and there's a lot of people on this site who, we never talk about wrestling because it's just like on your show, you never talk about it. You know, you have other topics that have to do, and some way it gets worked around and into it. But in this, there's people who really have no idea about wrestling or listen to the show because about motivation, fitness, and health, blah, blah, blah. So let me explain to you who Killer Kowalski is. He would have been one of the legends. The truest legends of the, what would you say, the 50s and 60s? He would have been like, same 70s, too. He had an amazing run. And for a guy like that to come down, so you must have gotten in touch with him about his school, and that just blows my mind that he didn't have some guy come pick you up, that he actually took the time and the effort. That says a lot about, you know, who he is.
You know, that's so incredible. And then later in life, you know, like when I was in WWE, he was a very big fan of my work, and he always went out of his way to tell me that. Like, he would come to the arenas when we were in the area, and he'd bring his students, and he would specifically make sure I heard him, and he'd come over and he'd tell his students, this is the guy to watch, you know, he's the best one here. And he would always put me over, and I never knew if he put two and two together. I don't see how, if I was him, I wouldn't remember some rosy-cheeked little kid, you know, from 1989 that rolled into my school, and I certainly don't have the same look, so I doubt that he ever knew I was that same kid, but I did tell him that you were so great to me, I appreciate it, and again, I doubt that he remembered it. At the time, I was 185 pounds trying to lie, telling him I was 200, I remember that. ends up anyway, while I'm bagging groceries and saving money for a wrestling school, to go to Kowalski's and trying to figure out how I'm going to afford an apartment and everything in Boston. Turns out there's a wrestling school 45 minutes from where I'm living at my parents' house, and it happens to be by an instructor who can hold just as much name value as Killer Kowalski. And to people listening that don't know, there's not very many. Like you said, he's a legend. There's not very many of those. However, the original Sheik was one of those very men.
Wow. Wow,
the Sheik, yeah, and Kowalski actually were both trained by the same guy, Bert Ruby. And Sheik used to tell me Kowalski was already a star when Sheik was getting in. So there's a little bit of the age difference there. And I was able to train with the original Sheik and not have to worry about having an apartment in Boston, Massachusetts. And I'm glad, just like everything in life, I'm glad, you know, it happened for a reason and that my path went the route that it did.
Well, you know, everything happens for a reason. I don't know if you saw the movie Crazy Heart with Jeff Bridges, where he won the Oscar for that. But he sings that song, and I actually like his voice. He sings this one part. He said, "You don't realize what you've got till it's gone. Everything happens for a reason, even when it's wrong." And he said, especially when it's wrong. So that's like my new everything happens for a reason add-on to that. But, you know, how many times has kids come up to you and said to you, "Oh, man, oh, you're my hero, blah, blah. You know, I want to be a wrestler so bad. Can you tell me what to do?" You know, I don't really think they realize all the shit that we went through to get there. You know, I mean, how many times has that happened to you? Was it all the time or what?
Well, it does. It happens a lot, you know, and it's the one thing that I can't do is tell these guys that there's no way. Because
right.
I made it happen. So I can't crush their dreams. If they want advice, if they say, "Hey, you know, how can I get into wrestling?" I say, go on your internet, Google pro wrestling schools, put in your zip code, watch how many pop up. It doesn't mean they're all going to be good, but there you go. There's a start. You know, do some homework. And then, you know, if I have time, I'll give them more advice than that, you know, on the schools. But when it comes down to them actually saying, "Do you have any advice on getting into the business?" I say, "Well, as long as you realize you're swimming upstream and there's, you know, one out of probably a million people that try it that are actually successful at it, if you still want to do it, knowing all those odds are against you, then I would just say do it out of love. And if you love it enough to overcome everything else, best wishes to you."
And very similar, I say to them, if you can't live without it, I mean, if you just got to have it. And I say got to have it, and like I talked about earlier before you came on, when I talk to kids about living the dream, to me, living the dream is finding something that you love to do and figure out a way to get someone to pay you to do it. Now, hopefully you get paid enough to, you know, give you a lifestyle, you know, no matter what it is. And you and I were fortunate enough to have been able to aspire to that and made good money, where a lot of guys, you know, they may never leave the independent circuit, but they love it so much that they keep doing it. And they do it past their time, and which breaks up their body. And that's going to be my next lead. And I talked about this earlier as well, and I've talked about it before on the show, that where YRG start, where it comes from, you know, is yoga-based and yoga-inspired. But before that, it was watching you stretch on the routine. Can you tell everyone here how that started with your flexibility and how you started in the schools that you did in the you know, the mixed martial arts and stuff?
Yeah, for me, a really good stretch is just as important as hitting the weights, you know, and the difference being I may be able to get by on appearance without stretching. In other words, if I have to sign autographs at conventions for a few days and I don't get to stretch, I don't have time, I'm going to know I'm not at my best, but on the front, no one else is going to know. Whereas if I'm not hitting the weights, I feel like I look different. So that's basically the difference. Either way, I got to have them both to feel like I'm at my best. I started stretching in high school, in a gym class or a health and fitness class, and they taught me the importance of building muscle while you're stretching so that you can maintain the flexibility as you grow. And at the time, I already knew I was going to be a pro wrestler. I wanted to put on, you know, good 50 pounds or so, and I didn't want to be stiff from it. I wanted to still be flexible. And I got into martial arts through wanting to wrestle also. There was a guy in town that had a ring, and at this point, me and my buddies were slamming each other on the living room floor, so we went to the guy's house. We wanted to get in his ring. Turns out he's a kickboxer and a promoter. And next thing you know, I'm setting the ring up at shows, opening up the show with a choreographed wrestling match with me and my buddies, and then having a kickboxing match also. And sometimes I'd have an extra match because some drunk would want to get in the ring and fight, and I had that hunger. I'd be like, me. I wanted to learn and get better. And at that time, you know, the shows that we did were at nightclubs and at outdoor parties with bands. So it was always like a rougher crowd, and I was really excelling, knocking everybody out. So I found that I was really good at the martial arts as well. So stretching was always important to me, and the martial arts and the stretching became part of the style of the pro wrestler that I eventually became. Like, the whole package, once it all came together, was very much about the martial arts, about being flexible, and forget about the character. In real life, I'm not getting out there in the ring unless I feel like I got the best chance of not pulling a muscle, doing all my flips and kicks and crazy dives and jumps that I do. Stretching for me is my insurance. There's no guarantees, but after I stretch, I feel like I'm at my best, and I feel like it's going to take a hell of a lot more to hurt me out there.
And I testify to that. And I don't know if we talked about this when we had the interview where we went on to DDP TV, and which will be coming up there. I'll be putting this up on my The Real DDP blog probably later this week of the interview that Rob and I did, but I wanted to have him on the show first. And you know, we talked about, you know, the stretching and stuff there. I was at an independent show, and I'd seen you. I thought maybe you were, let's see, in 1992. How old would you have been?
21.
21. Yeah, okay. So it was like, I think it was 90. It was 92, and you were at a match. You were having a match with someone, and I was in the back talking to some guys because I was doing some independents here and there. And in between that time, WCW had fired me. Well, they let me go because my contract was up, and I tore my rotator cuff. So you know, meat on the hoof, you're gone, and no one ever thought I'd ever come back again. And another reason why I never squash anyone's dreams. Anyone's like one of my buddy Dylan's. I'm sure he's listening tonight. He lost 100 pounds doing the YRG workout, and in 10 months he went from 292 to 192, and then he wanted to be a wrestler. And you know, while he was in high school, he was learning how to wrestle, and now he's out of school and going to for editing and stuff so he can edit films. He does all my stuff on The Real DDP, any of the really hot videos that you see that he puts the compilations together is Dylan, who actually does that. And he decided that he was going to that he was going to be a wrestler. And I explained it to him, you know, as long as you can't live without it, and he can't, it's in his soul. And if he never leaves the independent world, he doesn't care, you know, because that's, you know, he's loving what he's doing. So you can't squash somebody's dreams. So back to you in the ring that night, I'm watching you go off the top rope and somersault or something onto some people. And I was just like, oh my God. you know, watching you. And at the time, I'm thinking, boy, I wouldn't want to be that guy when I got to be around 40. Yet now you're coming close to 40, and you're still going.
Yeah, so, you know, and that's really, like, that's the payoff right there, you know, which I'm humble, you know, so I'm not one to throw it in everybody's face, you know, and say, ha, I'm better than you. But back in 93, I started wrestling for All Japan. Stan Hansen used to give me so much shit because I was diving out to the floor. I'd jump up on the guardrail and do backflips off the guardrail and all that. And he was just like, he was telling me, like, that, you know, I'm not going to last that long, and my career is going to be over by the time I'm 35. Jim Ross, when I got to WWE in 2001, used to tell me the same thing. He kept saying, well, you're just not used to going on this schedule where you rest. You're not used to going where you wrestle every single day. You're not going to be able to keep that up. You know, we'll check on you in about 6 months. And, you know, eventually they all had to eat their feet. And I'm world champion, sticking to my guns, because I believed in myself and didn't let everyone else's negative energy break me down.
That and then there another, and this is another reason why we're talking about living your dreams, and you know, and actually getting to spend. Rob, we didn't know each other that well when we were wrestling, but since we've been out, I feel like I'm really getting to know you, bro, and the fact that you are, you know who you are, but you're humble. When I was on Top of the World, I was still the same cat I am right now. I never talked down to people. I hung with people who are fans. We both have, and he's been on the show here before, and he's a regular on your show as well. We both have a good buddy who actually came and stayed with you, Officer X. And he actually came in and worked out with us all. We'll get to that in a little bit. But the way you – it's just funny that we both would end up being buddies with a guy that we never – you know, neither one of us knew at one time or another. And he's just a really good guy. But that takes a real, like, I call Mickey Mouse with tattoos, you know.
Right. Just so you know, like – I just think this is, like, worth saying since, you know, this show is all about improving and self-growth. I actually, like, I wasn't, like, a different person before, you know, but I actually don't have, and maybe it's because I'm such a self-perfectionist. Like, I know I've gone through and listed, you know, like, my qualities and shit. I've done, like, this spiritual exercise where I realized one of my main preoccupations that distracts me from actually being spiritually aligned is that I beat the shit out of myself. I'm my own worst critic. And that's probably why, but I don't have, like, the real self-peace of feeling that I've always been cool. I just feel like I'm always learning, I'm always growing, and I always feel like I'm such a better person than I was yesterday that when I look back at people that knew me, like, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, I can't really say, you know, I can't defend that guy even, you know, like certain kinds when I look back at myself at certain incidences and I think, wow, I mean, I was kind of an asshole. And I don't think an asshole by the standards of right now when I call someone an asshole, I don't think I have it within me. I don't think I have it within me to really be that guy. But to be a different version of myself, a lesser version, like, I think there's people that knew me way back in the day. I don't know. If you would have known me, let's say back when I was in WCW, I was such a young, green kid. You know, my perspective on the whole world was different. Certainly I'm different now anyway. So, you know, very comfortable with myself and who I am and my position in life now. But again, you know, if you talk to me next year, you may hear me say, wow, man, I didn't know shit back then when I was doing DDP's radio show.
Well, I think it's all about growth, you know. From our workouts to our self-image to everything. When I was in the nightclub business, I used to say I'm not conceited, I'm convinced. You know, I was a cocky son of a bitch, and I just was. And, you know, when I started wrestling, and you learn humility, as you know, you go up there, especially how I did it, from being a manager to a color commentator to a wrestler. And as you know, Rob, who wants to put over the manager color commentator? You know, so the boys were pretty snug on me. And, you know, I got my ass kicked a lot. And it was like, so you want to be a wrestler? This is what it's about. You know, it's not checkers. But, you know, that driving force that you've got to have. And I got humble, really humble there. And then when my career blew up in the 90s, my buddies, you know, who were friends of my buddy Smokey, who wrote my – helped me write Positively Page, the Diamond Dallas Page Journey, he said people would ask him, who knew me from the bar business, they must be – he must be impossible to be around because I was – pretty damn cocky as this guy running these hot clubs. And he said, actually, he's way more humble. And that's what I found, that the more, you know, over I got, and the more I felt like that I was helping people and inspiring people, especially by the story of becoming the oldest rookie ever, 35, you know, becoming the oldest world champion at 43, you know, to actually inspire people, it humbled me. And it really, the more notoriety I got, the even more humble I got, and the more I thought about things. And I don't know if you deal with breathing, but, you know, we talked about it when we went down to L.A. Boxing down there in Costa Mesa before we started the workout about the breathing. Do you do many? I got to tell you this. Before, you guys know that I've been doing this Uddiyana Bandha, sucking my diaphragm in. Rob, we got to get a picture of you doing that. I don't know. I know we videoed that day. I'll put it up there. Rob, tell them what you can do with that, your stomach, with your diaphragm.
Well, it's called a vacuum, and basically you exhale all of your air out of your lungs so that they're completely deflated, because if there's any air in them, then they'll take up space, because you're sucking in your stomach to the point of where every little inch counts. And it's a trick I've done for a long time. I did see it one time in a magazine, a men's fitness magazine. I was like, son of a bitch, like, that actually has a use. But you have to spot yourself so that your muscles and your stomach aren't flexed to hold your weight, you know, so you got to relax your core by having your weight on your knees and however you can spot it. And then you suck your gut in so much, I can reach in under my rib cage, and I suck in so much that it actually kind of wraps around my rib cage and under. And, like, you know, if I haven't eaten in a while and have a real empty stomach, I can, like, almost reach in and, like, grab my heart. That's what I'm trying to do, is put my hands around my heart.
He's not kidding. You've been doing that since you were, like, five, right?
Yeah, I don't know. But since I was a little kid, yeah. And I weigh a lot more than I did when I was a little kid, but I can still do that, yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's like, I think, you know, when it gets to stretching, you know, I've got a stretch video that I've been working on for like 10 years at least, and it's to tell my perspective. You were asking about the breathing. I'm unorthodox in the ring. I'm also one of a kind all across the board. I mean, we're all individuals. We all have our own perspectives, our own thoughts about everything. Mine tend to be different than most people's, which I think is a very good thing. I don't want to say that I feel like I'm above most people, but, you know, when you disagree with somebody, it's usually because you think you're right and they're wrong. You know. So anyway, when I get to the stretch DVD, I have a specific way that I can explain what I'm doing and the state of mind that you have to get in to experience it my way. And it has a lot of it does have to do with breathing. A lot of it, all of it has to do with the relationship between your mind and your body. When people are stretching, and they do know which muscle that stretch exercise is actually supposed to be stretching, and they can think about that muscle. A lot of times they're contracting their muscle because they're pulling it too far. It's not comfortable. Then they're fighting themselves, and you can tell, right, because their face is grunting. Going, well, they're not going to get very far that way, because you know, think of your muscles as being like a balloon. You need them relaxed so that you can pull them and elongate them and maximize their elasticity. If it's contracting, it's doing the opposite. It's pulling in towards each other, and it's doing that to protect the muscle, because you're pulling it and it's trying to not be injured. So you have to actually build your relationship between your mind and your muscles so that your muscles trust your mind. And that may sound crazy, but anyway, that's what I'm going to get in depth with on my DVD. And when we're talking about being able to suck in at the rib cage, I wonder if and I believe that I just have a much more heightened perception of that relationship between my mind and my body. And it wasn't something I worked on a spiritual level when I was a kid, but some people are coordinated, some people aren't. I can show you that I'm one of those guys that I can wiggle my ears without wiggling anything else on my face. I can make one eyebrow go up and down without anything else on my face moving. Why is it that certain people can't do stuff like that? Because I believe it has to do with that connection between your mind and your body. How can it not?
It's neurological connections. It is. Obviously, you're wired in, bro.
All right, okay, so it's also something that I work on. It's important to me, so I put energy into that. And then, and thereby, I get the best results from my stretching.
So now let's take it from stretching into, we went down, I really had a great time. We went down with Officer X and Justin McCulley, who I'm actually going to ask to come on here on the show too. An MMA fighter. He totally got the whole dynamic resistance and the workout, and he was a fan, and I'm a fan of his. And what a great personality he has, bro. I'm so happy that you put us two together, because I'm actually going down there, and I wanted to ask you, are you in town on Sunday or are you working?
This Sunday is a huge night for all of the wrestling industry. We're having a pay-per-view tribute.
Right.
This is a tribute to the old school ECW. So I have so many people tell me they're going to buy this, and they don't normally even get the pay-per-views. I think it's going to be the highest rated ever.
I forgot that was this Sunday. That's one of the reasons why we did make it at 2:00. We're doing the workout at 2:00 so that we can catch it. I might even just stay down there with those guys and watch it with them, which would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that'll be a party, man. The McCauley brothers are always good for a party. Justin's one of my best friends, has been the whole time since I met him, since I've been out here in California, and always just good energy coming out of that guy. He's one of those guys that he knows how to make people feel better after they encounter him. You know what I mean? Like, it could just be, honestly, like, it could just be a waiter coming over saying, what would you like to drink? And, you know, a lot of us are mundane, whatever, can I have some water? But Justin finds a way to perk that guy up. It's like, it's important to him, you know? And he'll be like, what's good, bro? Oh, yeah? Oh, sweet, that's good. All right, cool, man, bring me some of that. And the guy's like, wow, man, I feel good about myself, and that guy is really cool. I met a new friend. That's Justin. He's one of the coolest motherfuckers I ever met.
I felt like I knew him all my life, and we texted me. He said, how about this Sunday? I want to hit it. I was like, what time? He said, 2:00, and I knew at the time, but I forgot. I thought it was next Sunday. But yeah, you want to, if you're a wrestling fan, you haven't watched a pay-per-view in a while, this is going to be a hell of a pay-per-view, and I'm hoping for you, RVD, that it's the best buy that they've had, man, because you're on top of that thing there, and I just hope it really works out for you. So when we did the workout down there, tell some of the people what your thoughts of our YRG, because we did a pretty extreme workout down there.
Yes, we did, and Justin had some Brazilian MMA fighters show up, which added a lot of energy to the workout, because part of the workout is screaming, shouting, shouting while you're counting, which of course has everything to do with breathing, because you have to excel while you're shouting out numbers and stuff, so that added a lot to it. It was a great workout for me. Since I'm not used to following any group workouts that I do, I find that I know the more that I would know the routine, the better workout I'd be able to have, because some of my focus is spent, you know, like looking, trying to find the next position I'm going to, trying to see if I got this right, and then we're on to the next one. So that's been every experience I've ever had with a group workout. But this one, obviously, we went through and worked out. We had the heart rate meters on us, and we all had to like keep moving around on the mat because there was puddles of sweat under us and didn't get any more traction. Yeah, I just know, you know, going through that a few times, my heart rate would go up even higher because I'd be able to be more intense into it the more that I know it, for sure.
Absolutely, man. And, you were one of the reasons why so you have a little bit of pride in that, man, that I probably never would have even considered, you know, Kimberly saying to me, you should try yoga, if I didn't see how flexible you were. And the fact that, have you been wrestling for how many years now?
Well, you know, those matches that I was talking about, the kickboxing shows, we don't even count those. But I started training with the original Sheik in December of 89, and then started having my first matches in 90. So it's been a long time, you know. And
20 years. And how many injuries have you had in 20 years? If you have never seen him, you want to get this pay-per-view no matter what. But if you've never seen him, go to YouTube and watch some of the, you know, highlight reel. It'll blow your mind. And knowing that you can't fake gravity, how many injuries have you had, RBD?
Well, you know, to me, it's like an old school rule of thumb I've gone by that says you're not hurt if you can keep working, you know.
Right.
So,
yep.
So, you know, I've only really been hurt like one time bad enough to have surgery. That was in 2005. I had to have my knee reconstructed, an ACL replacement, and also a meniscus tear sewn up. Took 12 months off and then came back in and went right back to doing all my stuff, you know. Like, if you watch the tape after my surgery and before my surgery, you're not gonna know a difference. Nobody will, because I didn't shave nothing off of it. Besides that, you know, I've gotten banged up. Part of the job is always every week seeing what's banged up on you, what's bruised up, and all that. So for me, because I've been on the go for working a lot for a long part of my career, a lot of my job is recuperating. And I know you know exactly what I mean. One time you were giving me shit because you couldn't believe I don't ice. You were like, oh, RVD, all that shit you do for your body and you don't ice? What's the matter with you? And truth is, ice is great for you, but I'm really not that good at it. I have to be really, really, really hurt and need to recoup fast in order to go, and then I'll go and get some ice and put it on my ankles or shoulder or whatever. But I know that was part of your regular routine. But, you know, usually there's only so many days off, and I'm still kind of getting used to my TNA schedule, but it's been pretty erratic and irregular too. Like, I just got off an 8-day loop, and then I'll have like 2 days that I got to do a promotion before. And you know, with the WWE, whenever there was a day off, that usually meant you were going to work again in about 2 days at the most. So it's always about keeping at your best. You know, you need to be in top healthy condition. You're wrestling whatever, 100 times, 200, 300 times a year, whatever it is. It ain't a job where you can call in because you're feeling under the weather. Well, I can't come in tonight. People don't realize that. Regular people don't realize. Even with all the traveling and not sleeping and eating shitty and having a hard time getting to work out and all the factors going against you, you're advertised to be in fucking Topeka, Kansas. You can't call in sick and say, I'm going to take a sick day. So you got to do everything you can to be at your best, you know, and that's all about recuperating, because we get in several car crashes every night.
Absolutely. I want to ask one more question of you, bro, and then I want to open the lines here, because I'm sure there are some people out there who want to ask you a couple questions. But let me ask you this. How much longer do you see RVD in the ring? Have you thought about that, or are you just living it?
Well, I guess somewhere in between, you know. I don't know that I thought I would still be wrestling right now before, you know, and I'm pretty sure that the way things are going, I'm pretty sure I'll be around for a few years anyway. And then I don't know after that. I mean, I'm 39. I'll be 40 in December.
December
and,
what?
December. Now, if I had to guess, I don't really see me doing it more than much longer anyway than being like 45. But I don't know, because it could be if I may need, I don't know. You know, I really don't know. It's mind, spirit, and body, and they all go together, and I know that. Like, when with WWE, I was burnt out mentally. I didn't want to be there. I was resenting being there. My spirit was down. My body felt like shit. As soon as I got motivated and excited, you know, something good was going on. Hey, guess what? We're bringing ECW back. What? Boom, my body feels better. Everything feels better. Then all of a sudden, I was like, wow, you know what? I could go another 5 years like this, and that's the way that I think. And I know...
Right.
It's the power of the mind. So there is a lot of other stuff that I want to do in life besides wrestle. And when I did decide to return to full-time wrestling recently, I let them know that I mean, I didn't want to be drowning in the business, because I think it distracts me from other stuff that I should be doing. And so I do have that struggle within me, but I got a pretty sweet schedule now, and I think I just got to learn to manage. And like we said, it all happens for a reason.
Well, I want to ask one other thing. Well, first of all, December what? What's your birthday?
18.
December 18th, you know, that's a very special day for me, and that's funny you say that, because when I was in the nightclub business, talk about living a dream, again, I wanted to run and own my own nightclub, and we thought we had a piece of this nightclub that we, in 7 months, took to the top in, you know, the whole Southwest Florida. It was the hottest place, was Sarasota to Cuba, and then on December 18th, they came in and they terminated our contract so they could eliminate the two guys who were making a big chunk of money, and it was a big corporation tried to screw us. But what we did when they did that was went down the road to a club that we closed called Babaloo's and opened a place called Temptations. The old club used to be called Elations. I took the entire staff out of there. They believed in me that much, and they came to the other place, and we buried them. In the long short, I told him it was just for the season, and at the end I was going to be done, but that corporation didn't know it. So they literally paid me to leave town and, you know, sign a no-compete. In the meantime, over that fall, they would go out of business. We would come back in November and reopen the same club with a different name called Norma Jean's Dance Club on December 18th. So I won't forget your birthday, bro. But I want to say...
Right on.
So I won't, one other question before I bring one here. You just don't live the dream in the ring. You also do movies. How many movies about have you done?
I have been in 4 action movies and plus some different random TV shit. Always action oriented, you know. And I always have been. Like I was in this drama-like thing called 18 Wheels of Justice, but I got to do a little action, a little fight scene, and get shot. I've had my neck broke. I've been, you know, I've been killed quite a few times. And I got some other projects on the horizon too that are materializing as far as movies go. And that's something I wanted to do as a kid as well. You know, as a little kid, I used to watch Chopsocky Theater, and it was all these ninjas that could run up trees, and, you know, I would run up trees and do backflips and stuff like that, you know. And when I got into wrestling, I liked that too, and I liked comic books, and I'm into comics, you know. And I've got some projects I've written that are so damn close to being completely done. Not really talking about them a whole lot yet, because they've been so close to being done for so long, but yeah, basically I go for it. Like, I guess I'm a big kid because I got everything. I have a toy room in my house, and that's why we can't have a kid, because Sonya said that I'd have to get rid of my toy room, and I'm not willing to. You know, but it was like everything that I did want that's still important to me. I get, you know, and I go for it, and I believe that's what life is about, is ascertaining things, acquiring things, and I don't just mean material things, but it's about study yourself, find out what it is in life that gives you energy. And then put more energy into that, and you'll have a better life. I truly believe that, with the exception maybe of some sicko pedophiles, you know, then
right.
They should just They should just off themselves right now and
right.
All the stuff.
Dude, that was beautifully put. Again, this YRG Radio Roundtable show is about living the dream, and no matter what your dream is, and I've got a caller right here, and he's a big fan of yours, and he's a good friend of mine, and I've known him for quite a few years now. His name is Dylan, and he was the kid I was talking to you about who's a worker right now, and he's doing the independent thing. Dylan, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
You got some question for RBD?
I've been doing YRG for a couple years now, and like Dallas said, I lost 100 pounds, but over the last couple of years, I've put some weight back on, and I've basically fell down and picked myself up and fall down again, and I was wondering how many times you fell down, and what motivated, like, how'd you pick yourself up?
Wow, good question.
Well, here's a story that pops up in my head right off the bat, so I got to talk about it because I can't even think of anything except for this time I was in Jamaica, and I turned 21 on this trip. It was my first cool wrestling trip. You know, we were wrestling in Kingston, Jamaica, the Coney Island Amusement Park, where under peer pressure, I first time was forced to consume cannabis, by the way. That's a trip for a few reasons for me. Man, I had this match with, the hell's his name? Well, fuck him. the Tommy Starr, Mark Starr. Do you remember Mark Starr?
Of course I remember Mark Starr. He took the worst diamond cutter ever, and he was a great worker too, but he took the worst diamond cutter in the history when I did the NWO angle because we had no time, and I was supposed to go out there and just hit him with a diamond cutter, and Nash and Hall were going to come out. So I lock up with him. I hit him with a knee, hit him with a forearm, beat him back to the corner. I said, bro, we got to go home right now. Bank shot diamond cutter. Shot him in the turnbuckle, hit the opposite road. As he's come out of the turnbuckle, RBD, he's leaning forward like trying to lead me for it. I was like, where are you going? I'd like jump at him and grab him and pull him down. Place popped because it was a 30-second win, but I was like, oh, dude.
I don't have a good Mark Starr story either, all right? That's when I'm in Jamaica, and I'm green as shit, you know what I mean? Like, at this point in my career, I'm already having people tell me that I'm going to be a big star, I'm going to be a champion, I'm really good. So, of course, I have a lot of resentment from other guys there, like Mark Starr, yeah. Jimmy Backlund, all these guys. They just, you know, they just call me prima donna. You know what I mean? Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah. Hit it, prima donna. It's not gonna kill you. We all hit it. Fucking hit it. All right. So anyway, back in the ring though, I'm wrestling Mark Starr, and I don't know what happened during the match. Something didn't go. I don't know what it was. Something was fucked up. I'm sure it was my fault. I don't know if he called something I didn't hear or what happened, but something. And so he took the initiative to throw out the whole match, and then he grabbed me and picked me up and powerbombed me. Grabbed me, picked me up, powerbombed me. Grabbed me, picked me up again, boom, and powerbombed me, and then fucking pinned me, and then fucking, like, left the ring. And I'm like, that motherfucker just killed me in the ring, and then he's leaving me here like a pile of shit, you know? And I mean, I was doing interviews earlier to promote the show and all kinds of shit. I'm like, I'm green, but I'm one of the big baby faces, you know? So I was just like, fuck, man, what a dick. So not knowing any better, I roll under the bottom rope to the apron, do a backflip off the apron, boom, and then start high-fiving the fans in the front row. Hey, all right, cool, thanks. Hey, you like that flip, whatever. I get back to the dressing room, and Mark Starr, with Jimmy back there behind him, is, who the fuck trained you? Are you fucking kidding me? You're going to do a fucking backflip after you just took 3 bottle bombs? Who the fuck? I said, the Sheik. Well, then the Sheik must not know what the fuck he's talking about. I was like, oh, that's wrong. How are they going to say the Sheik don't know? And anyway, they fucking tore into me so much. You are never going to fucking make it. Blah, blah, blah. And, man, I was up sitting on top of a vending truck that night so I could be by myself and, you know, kind of like in a meditative spot where no one would see me on top of a truck bawling, going, oh, my God, what did I do? You know, I should have listened to my dad. I should have went to college. And I was just crushed. Because my dad supported me, but he wasn't like, oh, yeah, you know, my son's going to be a great pro wrestler. It was a lot more like my dad was like, he was supportive. And my deal with my dad was I had a scholarship to go to college. And if I tried, like, I don't know if it was 2 years or I think it was 2 years. I think I told my dad, I think I said, well, let me try for 2 years. If I don't make it, I'll go back to college. So here I am. After having everyone say, oh, you're going to be great, you're a champ. And at this point, I've been wrestling a couple of years, so I've been popping the crowds and, you know, got to enjoy the girl groupies and all that about it. So then all of a sudden, here I am in a fucking boom, stop sign. Fuck, what am I doing? I'm not going to fucking make it. Fucking wasted the last, oh, my God, I should have went to college. I was so fucking bummed, you know. And that was something, you know, that, like, I don't remember it happening to that extent again, but at that point, I felt so far away from home, so detached from any...
So what did you do? How did you pull yourself out of that?
Well, you know what? I stuck it out. I didn't do anything different except I fucking stuck it out. I remembered the reason that I was there was because I fucking believed in myself, and there must be something to the fact that I'm fucking booked in Jamaica and you know, just because these assholes say my career is over doesn't mean it necessarily is. So I hated them, and I remember I went to the school to work out one time, and I no-showed a match. I was supposed to wrestle Mark Starr in Tampa after that. I was like, fuck that fucking prick. I no-showed him. I got more heat for that. I got more heat for that. Mark Starr called, you know, he's calling me out at the wrestling school, and I'm like, man, should I fight this guy? I fucking hate him, but there's a pecking order, and you got to show respect, so you have that struggle there. And he's, you know, he's saying, oh, we're going to have a fucking great match tonight and shit, you know. And you don't think I know what the fuck I'm doing? I go, no, you made our match. We could have had a good match. You made it shitty. Anyway, I got a lot of heat. Jumbo Beretta, they put Jumbo Beretta in the ring with me. A big, do you know that guy?
Yeah, I don't know him, but I know him.
Anyway, he was a UFW shoot fighter, which was the submission at the time. Put him in the ring with me, and he stretched me every which fucking way. I had to hang in there and prove myself, but keep coming after him. And okay, throw another kick. Wham! He'd take me down, fucking put my ankle, you know, up in my ear. That's how I learned how to tap. At first, I didn't even know I was supposed to tap. That's how I learned. Okay, and stretched the fuck out of me, and then the promoter said, you did good, son. You know, you hung in there. You proved you were tough today or whatever. And I guess that gave me a little belief in myself. But all I did was I marched on. You know what I mean? I mean, nobody knew about that shit the next time I had a show and I was wrestling somebody else. They were screaming that I was doing the split-legged moonsault and the fucking in the back kick. So I just kept persevering. And it ends up, you know, a learning experience. You know, I go back and, you know, would I do things different? Yes, no, it doesn't fucking matter. You know, thing is, I made it through, but I went straight through. I didn't go around it. And, you know, just one thing that always helps me, and I didn't know this back then, but I know it now, and I use it whenever I'm trying to figure myself out, and I tell everyone else, look at your priorities. Look at what's really important to you. Own your priorities. You'll understand yourself and your actions a lot more.
Dude, that is a great answer to a question that I think everybody needs to hear. And it's all about the perseverance. And, you know, for me, it was never taking no for an answer. You know, anyone telling me you're never going to be able to get your job back after I tore my rotator cuff. You're 37 years old. I'll never forget Kimberly saying to me, Paige, we really need, you know, we need you to go back in the nightclub business. You know, this wrestling thing isn't going to work, honey. And I said, you need not to let that door hit you on the ass if you don't believe in what I'm doing. You know what I mean? Cause, and if she was 33, she probably would have told me to fuck off. But being that she was 23, you know, she was like, oh, my God, I guess he really does believe in himself.
So hopefully anybody listening will find a way to apply this to their own life, you know. And Dylan, you know, if you lost 100 pounds, that's fucking amazing. So you already know you can do it. So there's no room to even doubt yourself now. If you put it back on, there's a reason, you know, maybe whatever. Your body might be adapting to the workout you're doing. Maybe you want to switch it up and try something different, or maybe it's your diet, whatever. But, I mean, we already know you can do it. There's not even room for doubt.
Yes. Thank you guys for everything. Yeah, that really it's been tough for me to find a new motivation. But I've been down and up and down and up, and but that was great, and I appreciate it.
And as you know, man. As you know, bro, you know, no one can pull you down more than you, but the positive side of that is nobody can pick you up more than you.
Yep.
No one can get you more focused. No one can make you work harder. You know, just like what Rob's saying there, you know, and, you know, same story with me. And that's why when I was hearing his story, I was like, man, we have so much in common, completely different. But if you looked at him starting off and tell me someday when that kid, when, you know, when he was 18 years old and, you know, buck 85, buck 90, that he was going to be a, you know, world champion and going to be one of the top guys in the business, people go, crazy, he's too small. Wrong.
Absolutely.
Or I'm too old. Wrong. It's, you know, it's having that perseverance to continue to work through. Now, I know we got another caller on here. We got Brett Wilkinson. Brett, you there?
Yes, sir.
Hey, how are you, little buddy?
Good. How are you, Dallas?
Good, man. Good. Rob, I want to tell you a little bit about Brett. Him and his family came down. His dad and his mom, Rich and Kathy, and their little his sister Kaylee. They came down to see me in an autograph session that I did in Atlanta. And afterwards, I did a YRG workout, and the whole family was doing the workout and getting together, because it's one of those things you can do with your family, you know, and everybody doing it at the same time. And after coming down and you know, working with me and hanging out, you know, they went back, and Brett said, do you think I could talk to you about some, you know, some wrestling? And I was like, sure, as soon as you hit a goal. I said, go, you know, think about a goal that you want to hit, and then when you hit it, you know, and you achieve it, you know, let me know, and then we'll spend 30 minutes talking about wrestling. And He read my book from cover to cover, which is like 345 pages, which he'd never read a book that big. But he also went into that, what I call Black Crow, you know, when you put your hands down, you put your knees on your elbows, and you balance yourself there. He did it for over a minute. And you know, he'd hit two big goals, and we talked about it. So he understands about goals and setting goals. And how old are you now, Brett?
I am 13.
13. So what's your question for RVD?
When you are on the road, do you find it hard to eat healthy? And I was wondering if you eat at restaurants or do you go to, like, the grocery store?
When I'm on the road, I do eat at restaurants, and it can be very challenging to eat healthy. For some of the wrestlers, it's a lot more important than other wrestlers. You know, again, we're all individuals, and there's no mandated control over how much we exercise or eat. And if you compare a wrestler like, say, Trevor Murdoch or Dusty Rhodes to someone like, you know what I mean? There's a big difference, you know. And that's what wrestling is, a lot of colorful characters. And obviously, because RVD's in such phenomenal shape, obviously I eat pretty good, but I still like to go to Cracker Barrel and, you know, I'll eat some biscuits and gravy and stuff like that. Some of the guys will eat nothing but real, real strict, like just chicken breasts, and they'll say, you know, steam my hash browns, don't put them in oil, and they're so strict. And really, if it's that important to you, you can pretty much get that anywhere. You know, you can go to Denny's, you can go to Waffle House, you can go to IHOP, and you can say, I just want egg whites. You know what I mean? I just want a chicken breast. And if it's that important to you, but I'm kind of like a little in between. Like I eat, I'm sure I get a lot more fat than a lot of like bodybuilders, but I stay lean and ripped when I'm on the road. And then when I'm home, it seems like, I don't know if it's because I'm eating more and I'm not as mobile, because I'm always on the go when I'm on the road. I'm wrestling every day, maybe working out, sweating a lot, depending on where I'm at. I notice a big difference between the first day and the last day of a trip. On the last day, I'm way more lean. My abs are ripped. And it's not even intentional. It's just because I'm eating on the road, and I do eat somewhat healthy. I'm not drawn towards like candy. I usually don't eat desserts and or anything really that I think is just going to be garbage in my body. So I eat a lot of chicken and eggs, and I like beef too, you know. But it's challenging, but when it's part of your lifestyle, it's not that bad, you know. Like I've gone plenty of times when it wasn't as important to me and I was eating a lot of drive-thrus and stuff, and I didn't really feel as good, you know. So.
I want to comment on that, but I also want to let you know we're going to run a little bit later today because I'm having such a great time at RBD here tonight. And Yoga Doc, shut up. You're talking too much. Anybody who wants...
I'm loving the show. I'm loving it. It's great. Yeah.
Anyone who wants to call in and wants to ask RVD a question, and you're just listening to this, you could call at 347-994-1216. That's 347-994-1216. Brett, you have another question for RVD?
Oh, no, I don't, sir. Thank you so much, RVD.
Okay, yeah, right on. So a lot of that is a time factor, too. Like with WWE, where we had to hit drive-thrus a lot of times because we only got 3 hours to get, you know, 120 miles to the town from the airport. So if we did stop and sit down and have a good meal, we'd be late. So that's, you know, it just so happens to be that's not as much a factor with me anymore. And life's much better now because my whole life. It's much better. I get treated with a lot more respect, more like VIP, first-class treatment, and I will sit down and have a good meal now instead of rushing through the drive-thru. So that's a lot better. Yeah. You know, DDP, like, I should put this out there, too. In 2007, I guess it was, my contract ran out with WWE. I chose not to re-sign because I was so burnt out on the travel, the monotony of going town to town to town, wrestling. I had other stuff I wanted to do. And at that time, I had been really getting in touch with the fact that I motivate people. I reading response from the blogs that I would write on my website, robvandam.com. And also, you know, just I had this plan for the RVD TV, which I hadn't done yet, but I wanted people to know the real me because the Rob Van Dam on the WWE television, he does cool moves, but I don't like any of the scripts that they would give
right.
him. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right, right,
really?
Yeah, absolutely. Are you kidding me? Me? You're asking me that?
right.
Yeah, right.
So part of my reason for venturing away, and I didn't know if I would return to wrestling or not. So, you know, if people are listening to this show that don't know wrestling, like you said, that's a big part of my story is that I walked away on top not knowing if I was going to come back or not. And I spent some time really getting spiritual, really studying internally, and it was very beneficial. And I hate to really get away from that, which is unavoidable as my energy gets dissipated or distracted because I have a lot of stuff going on. You know, it's nice to really get in touch with that. But I had some insight to my past that has a lot to do with motivating people, and I have a vision of someday having a crowd of people there to see me, not to do the Rolling Thunder, but to hear my message, and my message is developing through life. I don't know if you're going to be part of this or not, DDP, but it could be because we go through life and we run into people and we make connections and it's all part of our past. Our paths are intertwined a lot, but this is something, you know, I go on stage and I do comedy. Sometimes that's going to be part of it. I understand that's me practicing speaking in front of people or using humor to get my point across. I've only done that a few times, but already I've learned from just going up there and saying things that are funny, or I can actually deliver a message, you know, and which I can do when I want to also. And it's just something that that I see eventually down the road, and it doesn't have much to do with wrestling except for the fact that that's where the fan base comes from. That's what puts me in a high-profile situation. But you know, so I'm glad to do a show like this and be able to show and think from a complete different perspective than people that may know me or are used to hearing.
Yeah, well, dude, like I said, when we went down there in Marlin, my buddy was down there filming us. When we got done interviewing each other, because we both interviewed each other for our own shows that we're both working on, he came up to me and he goes, "Dude, you two just had one of the most interesting interviews I've ever heard." And they were similar, but they were completely different, you know. But it was just like, you're both very inspiring, and you're both plugged in the same way. And that's what I think has drawn us together now at this time. And it's very, very cool. And I'm really excited again, like I said, to go down to, if anybody's listening that's down in the Costa Mesa area, we will be at that LA boxing gym. I know Justin's putting together a bunch of fighters and stuff to come together, and I never would have had that hookup if you didn't pull that all together.
Keep in mind, Justin will forget between now and then, and it will be late.
Oh, God, was he late. That's why. But now I'll have the pay-per-view to back it up. Now, at the moment, I didn't put that in the text. I will definitely be saying, dude, I don't want to be starting this thing at 5.
Right. Yeah, if anyone listening is somehow not motivated or charged up from this conversation, they should know I believe it's choice. Everything in life is choice, you know, everything. Mental addiction, it's choice, you know. Everything, I don't even get that. People say, "Oh, I wish I could quit, I wish I could quit, I wish I could quit." Well, Just don't light up. You quit.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
My friend, she said she tried everything. She couldn't quit smoking cigarettes. Couldn't quit. She got pregnant. Boom. She quit. It was all because of priorities. You know, that's why I say it's all about your priorities. And people say, you know, like, yeah, but he knows that makes me mad when he says that. You choose to react the way that you react to everything. The mind is such an incredible power, and it does give you that power. You choose your own reaction. So don't say, it makes me angry, or it makes me happy, or it makes me freak out, because that's you choosing to react to it, and you do have choice over that if you want it. And people like me and DDP, we want it. We want to take that control and use it to get the most out of life. That's why we talk this way, right?
Dude, you know, it's so funny you say that, because I came up with a I'd like to make it a visual thing. And someone was telling me how bummed out they were, you know, and how, you know, how depressed they were. And I said, let me just take you someplace for a minute. Let me tell you that you're controlling all of this. You know, there's so many things out there, prescriptions you can take to help you this, help you that. When your mind is the most powerful organ that we have, period. So I said, let's do this. Imagine you just went to see the doctor. You just went to see your doctor, and he said, you've got 3 months to live. You've got pancreatic cancer. Now there, you're going to pull yourself into such a hole of depression. Oh, my God, your life's going to flash before your eyes when he goes, oh, wait a minute, I fucked up. That's not you. That's Sally. You're fine. Ah! I mean, it's like you went from depression to elation. And that just shows you the power that you really did, because the doctor saying it didn't make you get depressed. You made yourself get depressed. Now, I got a buddy on here on the line here who's a regular and amazing guy on our Team YRG site, who's there. You talk about inspirationally cheerleading on a lot of different people to and not just verbally. We'll actually take people up and work out with them and help them, you know, to achieve their goals. And I met him on my way to Afghanistan to see the troops. Been to Iraq 3 times. This was on one of my ways to Afghanistan. And we laid over in Qatar, or Qatar, as he likes to call it, where it's one of the holding areas, and it's the only place the guys can go, the troops can go and actually have a beer, you know. So he was there working at one of the sites there as a disabled veteran who is now, you know, working in the private sector as with computers, and he's a genius with them. And when I met him, he weighed about 300 pounds, and he came up to me and he said, "DDP, you know, I know you're doing the workout in the gym," and there was like 80 people there for this, because, you know, over there, all those guys do is workout. So I was bringing my A game plus, like one we went through, you know, and I said, "You know, dude, this is going to be a really hard workout, you know, really challenging. But if you will go into this thing I call safety zone, or you'll lower to a knee, or and mainly check your ego at the door, you'll be okay." And the bottom line is, he went through that workout, you know, just like you when you were rigging out your shirt, all the sweat in it. He was just soaking wet. And, you know, he got on the program, lost about 20 pounds, but then life got in the way, and, you know, the divorce and, you know, the whole deal, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, he put on that plus, you know, 20 more pounds. And then when this, my new YRG fitness system came out, he came on, he got it, and then he's joined Team YRG. And in 9 months, he lost 100 pounds. And he is now on his next goal. I'll let him tell you when he gets on here. His name is Doug Stefan. And, Doug, welcome to the show, bro.
Hey, thanks, Dallas.
Hey, Doug.
Hey, RVD. How you doing? Hey, Doc.
Hey, what's up, bro?
Not much, man.
So you got a question for the man here or what?
Well, no. Actually, you know what? He just hit on a key point, you know, because the main thing is about choices. And, you know, everybody has a choice to. Just like, you know, for many years I would say, "Oh, you know, yeah, I'm going to lose weight, or I'm going to do this. I'm hitting the gym and all this other shit," until I actually went and saw when I was at 326 pounds. And that's when I made the choice. And I said, it's almost like, you know, a doctor telling you, you know, "You're going to die if you don't stop smoking." And that's the way I felt. So for me, it was a choice, and I just made it. And everybody that says, "Oh, it can't be done, it can't be done," it can be done. You know, it's just how much do you really want it? You know, but on the other note is, you know, I just like to say thanks to RVD for helping give DDP the mindset of creating YRG. it's a godsend, so thanks, man.
I mean, you know, it's always rewarding, and obviously DDP knows, because he has so many people that can give honest testimonials of his of their personal firsthand experience with this this exercise regimen that he created. So he knows the rewards. So it's always great to know that someone has benefited and you've been able to help somebody out in any way, you know?
Yeah, you know, one thing Jake said to me, you know, when I tore my rotator cuff and I was fired and I was home, and, you know, there was times I pulled myself down and thinking, man, maybe I'm not going to get, you know, rehired. And then I bounced back up. How I do it, when I go into that depression, and I've talked about this on other shows, when I get myself where I just, you know, pulling myself down, I think of the last bum I saw. We were talking about this last night, about bums last night. But you know the bums I'm talking about, RBD, the ones that you know they're never going to get off the street. You know, they are truly the homeless. They're not even, no one will even hire them because they've run down so much. You know, that I thank God that I'm not that guy, or that's not my dad, or, you know, my brother, or the last kid. And you've had a lot of experience with this too as well, Rob, that the kid who's got cancer and she's 7 years old and she has no hair, and, you know, that's not my child or my niece, I woke up this morning and I didn't have a heart attack. I mean, none of these things had happened to me. So what am I so pissed off? Why am I so pulling myself down for? I'm very, very, very lucky. And it's all about living life with an attitude of gratitude. And you want to say something?
No, on that one, Dallas, you know, I think for me, you know, it's, you know, there was a whole bunch of different stuff. But when you and I went to the Center for the Intrepid, that just was an amazing, amazing thing where – I don't know how anybody can bitch about anything after what those guys have been through and what they're going through and the positive attitudes those guys have.
Yeah, Rob, I tell you the story. I have on Team YRG, I have an email. Actually, I'll forward you the link that I put up there. If you think you're having a really bad day or life dealt you a shitty hand, read this every time that happens. And I talk about Doug and I, we went when I was down there at the tattoo convention, the Alamo Tattoo Convention, doing the autograph thing and stuff. Beforehand, Doug and I went over to Randolph Air Force Base and got together with a bunch of the troops and did YRG. And then there was a bunch of people that he has doing YRG down there. So I gave them another separate class later on. And then we'd gone over to the Intrepid Center, and that's where all the wounded warriors are. And right now I'm trying to get on Celebrity Apprentice, and that's my, who I want to be my charity, because I'm connected to those guys on so many different levels. And as you know, when they see any one of us, it's like seeing Santa Claus, you know, because they love what we do. And when we were walking in there, the lady who's like the angel of the Intrepid Center, she was like, "Now listen, I know you're big tough guys, but you know, you may not be used to seeing what you're about to see. And you know, if it gets too much for you, just tell them you got to go to the bathroom. And if you're talking to them, ask them what happened, because they actually, it's cathartic for them to talk about it, and they want to talk about it." And I walked in there, bro, and the first guy I see, he's in a wheelchair. He's got one leg. He's got the, you know, so he can walk around. I forget what the prosthetic. His one hand is gone. He's burnt probably 90% of his body, and part of his brain was blown out. He had a big divot in his head, and he was blind. And I was sure that's probably where his blind came in, when he lost part of his brain. But he was just sitting there, and I walked up, put my hand on his shoulder, and I went, "Hey, buddy." I go, "I'm Diamond Dallas Page." And he goes, "DDP? My dad loves you." And he lit up, and we talked. And as we did, I watched these warriors, you know, with one or two legs gone, you know, one or two arms gone, or an arm and a leg gone, and they're working out. And they're working out like warriors. And all they want to do is go back, which, you know, I don't understand that, but I do understand on the side that they want to go help their buddies, because there's a bond that I guess, you know, you can never have as tight as you can when you're in that situation. But, you know, those guys, we stayed there for a couple hours, and it was an amazing thing to see their spirits lift, but they were already pretty positive. And if those guys can be positive, I mean, what the hell are we worried about, you know?
Well, comparison is always a good quick way to set your perspective straight.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Tonight we have been talking about living the dream and how to overcome adversities as you get knocked down. We had a couple great questions tonight. I'm going to close it up here because we're winding down, but I want to thank RVD for coming in here and spending time with us, and I hope we'll get you to come back again, bro. It was a pleasure having you on here, and I want to remind everybody who's listening that the pay-per-view will be this Sunday. What's the name of this pay-per-view, RVD?
Hardcore Justice, The Last Stand.
Hardcore Justice. I can't see a better man headlining that show out, brother. I want to thank you for being on the show. I want to thank Brett for coming by, and Doug and Dylan and Robert for, of course, getting everything together, and Yoga Doc for hanging here and listening to everything.
By the way, I'll have that video of us doing YRG up at robvandam.com in a couple of weeks.
Do me a favor, send me a link on that, because I will put that out and send that out to everybody. And
looking at it today, downloading it off my camera onto the computer.
Sweet, sweet, man. And I also want to let me know any of the links that you put up there, whatever, on RBDBTV, because I'll put that in a newsletter or a blog I've got and cross-promote that, bro. Let people know who the real RVD is. I want to thank you for having everyone for listening tonight. This is by far, to me, one of the best shows we have had today. A lot of amazing energy here. And I do want to let you know that I'm going to be having next month, celebrity guest will be Justin McCulley. I'm going to be bringing him on here. And after that, we're going to have Mark Merrow to come on, Mr. Inspiration himself, too. So I want to thank you guys for all listening and for coming and letting you know you've been wonderful. You've been marvelous. But see ya! Bang!
You love me! You hate me! You'll never forget me! Get ready to feel the... Yo High Five.